Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports, the second biggest podcast tonight. I think Draymond's might be the... Draymond gloating for half an hour is probably going to be the biggest one. I'm here sitting courtside in the TD Garden with Dan Feldman. How's it going, Dan?
I'm good. I didn't really think about it. Is Draymond going to podcast tonight? I feel like he might have better things to do.
Oh, I don't know, man.
Is podcasting what all the cool kids do the night the NBA Finals ends?
And I don't know that. I don't notice what the cool kids do, but I know with the traffic he gets, $5 says he's doing it.
I mean, he could do it tomorrow. He could do it, you know, and still get all the traffic. I don't know. He seemed ready to party to me.
He certainly did that too, and his family's here, so maybe he puts it off. But it won't be long before Draymond's talking. They're all talking a little bit. They're celebrating. Golden State Warriors close it out on the road. Fourth championship in 8 years. Were you surprised at all that they were able to close this one out, Dan?
No. I mean, they looked like the better team as the series came down the stretch. The Celtics looked tired. Credit to Boston for getting back into the game. And it was always possible that Boston could have won this, but no, it felt right that this was going to be the night.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had kind of changed my pick and had said it on PBT Extra and some stuff that I just, watching the last couple games, I don't think it's so much that the Warriors figured them out. Like, the adjustments were the adjustments. The Celtics were still, and I think this is part of the story, is they're still the bigger, more athletic team, but they hadn't been to this stage before. They were able to get by. Look, they beat the Heat. They beat the Bucks, but they weren't able to – they would just lose themselves. They would get away from what works. They would lose – call it poise, call it championship medal, call it whatever you want. They kind of lost that focus, and they'd start playing. Turning the ball over was the big stat, but they isolation basketball and go away from moving and doing everything they had done.
Well, I know I don't need to tell you this because you've been a proponent of it all along. The Warriors deserve a lot of credit for that. It's not just that the Celtics were sloppy. The Warriors' defense is awesome, and they forced Boston into tough positions, and the Celtics weren't accustomed to competing on this level. The deeper you go in the playoffs, the level of competition generally goes up. The Warriors are the best team. The Bucks were an excellent team, and in some years maybe could have won a championship. The Heat were very strong. Even the Nets, who they swept in a close sweep with the right breaks, the Nets had the talent to win. But these Warriors were a special team on a different level. They knew how to compete on this level, and that's why they won.
Yeah. I think for the Celtics, they're going to look at this. You know, Ime Udoka said afterwards, like, his message to them was, this is going to hurt. Use that, right? Use that as fuel going forward. I don't think there's any question that their players internally will do that. I think if you're Brad Stevens, you're also watching this going, man, we need shooting. We need a little depth. I mean, just the Warriors' role players stepped up in a way that the Celtics didn't. And that... Look, that doesn't mean I think Peyton Pritchard's a bad player, but the Warriors got more because of their system and because of the guys stepping up out of Gary Payton II and Jordan Poole and everyone, and Kevon Looney and on down the line, than the Celtics did.
That's coaching. This is the best coaching job Steve Kerr has done. Steve Kerr is an excellent coach in a lot of situations. All the championship years, he did a great job. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. But the talent on this Warriors team... I think you're maybe overstating a little bit. I don't think it's that great, except it was great in Steve Kerr's system, and Steve Kerr built the system to take advantage of that talent.
They did, and again, I think that they have. Well, I was about to say multiple shot creators. Clay really isn't that anymore, right? Like,
no.
We rephrase that. Clay might be again next year. We'll see what. We'll see where Clay is. He wasn't that in this series, and he. He had a very rough game six. It was not game six Clay. It didn't matter. Because Steph is so great, but then Jordan Poole stepped in and did a lot of that. And then they got some through transition. The 23 turnovers, 13 in the first half, did them in. And I guess we should talk about what ultimately swung this game, which was the stretch between the first and second quarters where it was a 21-0 Warriors run, and in 35-8, if you stretch that out a little bit, they just never got out of that hole.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this was Steph. It all starts with Steph. This team doesn't have that same level of scoring that it used to. Obviously, there's no Kevin Durant, Yeah. Klay, we just talked about, is not the same level of scorer he used to be pre-injury. Draymond is not the level of scorer he used to be pre-injury. And, like, that doesn't get talked about as much. Like, Draymond wasn't always this guy who refused to even look at the basket when he was wide open at the three-point arc. He could make some threes. He could attack the rim more aggressively. And that's not like he put up big scoring numbers, but it was enough to keep defenses honest. And that's not what it is now. And so when the Celtics could defend 5-on-4 because they could ignore Draymond, it was on Steph to step up a lot of those times, and he did. I mean, what a tremendous series for his legacy to finally win a Finals MVP and to put his team on the back. On his back, he's been capable of this, I think, for a long time. But to be in a position where he had to do it and then deliver is truly special.
I would say with Steph that the fourth ring and leading this team matters way more than the Finals MVP, which is a nice – I know we've been talking a lot about it, and it's a nice addition, but – did it matter that much?
Not to me so much, but I, you know, look, he could have won it in 2015, and this whole conversation would have been ignored. I thought he was the most deserving Warrior. I thought LeBron should have won it. Andre Iguodala obviously ended up winning it. But for Steph to win it, it's not the award. It's how he played. If the voters had gotten this wrong, I wouldn't say, oh, well, he doesn't have a Finals MVP. But he was so undeniable in five games of the series. He had one clunker, and that's part of it, right? We can look at the complexity of his NBA Finals legacy and say, for a great player, and I'm holding the highest standard. I think Steph Curry is a top 10 all-time player, like in the class with like a Kobe Bryant, a Tim Duncan, somewhere in that range. He hasn't been quite as good in the NBA Finals as his peers on that level. That's including the series, but he's getting closer to it with this result, where he really took over in so many of these games, gave him the scoring they needed.
As you mentioned, though, he has the one clunker, and I think that that's where the difference is. He has the 0-for-9 game. He has the bad night. They still win.
Yeah.
They still win that game because Andrew Wiggins, who has a huge game. Andrew Wiggins deserves a lot of credit for his defensive effort all series long on keeping Jason Tatum going to his left, and that was a team effort. Like, they swarmed Tatum when he came in, and Tatum at stretches made really good decisions, and at stretches didn't. And when they got in, Warriors got in trouble, which is, let me phrase it, when the Celtics got in trouble, they didn't start moving the ball. They kept trying to power through that and shoot, and they attacked strong defenders. They just kept doing things wrong, it felt like. But the Warriors also, like I said, forced them into that.
It was fatigue, I think, a lot of it with Tatum. Like, some of those drives in the game, and even the last game, he kind of went in, and it was isolation because it takes a lot of energy to move the ball around the court, to relocate yourself, to get the ball back. That's asking a lot deep in the playoff series for this team. I was shocked that Ime Udoka talked so openly about his team feeling fatigued. You can see it with Jason Tatum, I thought, especially.
Yeah, and two very physical seven-game series before getting to the finals where the Warriors, again, they played a more athletic team the last round in Memphis. It was five games. They had a week off before the finals started. It wasn't as grindingly physical as even this series was for them. And I think that served them.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the Warriors found all the right ways to negate Boston's athleticism advantage by being smart, by being physical, by being tough, by having a mental understanding. Like, Draymond Green's defensive intelligence right now is so through the roof because he's not the same athlete he used to be. And so I'm not sure if he's a better defender now. Maybe he's slightly worse, maybe slightly better, but he's on a similar level. But without the same athleticism, that's all intelligence. That's how you get through against a team like Boston.
Yeah, and again, it took them a couple games to figure it out. I think that, you know, the game story I wrote about this, I talked about their poise, but it wasn't just in game six where they got down 12-2. It was, as you mentioned, we talked about before, in this series, they had to figure out how to beat this team. This was a very good Boston team. They had to figure out over the last 2 years, and I think that's what's interesting with the Warriors is, and we'll talk about the Celtics about this in a second, is when you talk about, hey, can the Warriors get back here? Yeah, I think they can, not just because there's a few years left of Curry, Draymond, Klay, and whatever Klay ends up being when he's fully healthy. But they have Kuminga coming up. They have Wiseman coming up. They will pay Poole this summer. Moody. They have, when you look at this team, you're like, man, they just kind of lack youth and athleticism, but they don't. They didn't play it in this series because at this stage they couldn't. Those guys exist on that roster. to help them get through the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, credit the Warriors management. I did not like their plan. I thought they should have traded those young players to get immediate help. And I thought when they were down 2-1 in the series, it was exactly why, right? You know, they looked like they were going to end up one piece away. Maybe you wish you had somebody like Robert Covington on the team, and that could have swung a championship or not. All the upside you get long-term with those young players, some of whom I like, some of whom I'm a little more lukewarm on, all the upside you get, it's not worth it to trade him for a championship. If you can win a championship this year, it's worth it. And they did it. They get both. They win in every single way. They get the title. They get these young players for the future. I'm sure this annoys every other team around the league, every other fan base around the league. This team brags like crazy. Light years ahead. Yeah. You know, they talk about they get the most revenue in the league. It's not just that they have the most revenue in the league. They talk so much about it. Their payroll is through the roof. Like, they are not shy about sharing how they're winning. And then this plot to keep these young players and not really use them deep in the playoffs. Those guys, at least in the Warriors' judgment, weren't ready to help this team win. And they didn't trade him for somebody who would help this team win, and they win anyway. It's got to be infuriating for everybody else.
They played Kuminga in the Memphis series, but not when it mattered. I don't want to say not when it mattered. In games that mattered, but before the real pressure started, when they had to win, Kuminga was gone.
Yes.
Right. Like they, but you give him a taste, right? Like you give him a sense of this is what playoff basketball is. This is where you've got to be. I thought that Steve Kerr handled that development really in a, I'm about to say really well, but that looks like something he learned from Pop, doesn't it? Like that was right out of the Popovich. Give him, we're going to let Kawhi have a taste of this, but you know, we're going to lean on him in a couple of years. They're in a position. It's easy to look at this young Boston team and say, yeah, they'll be back, man. And do you feel like they will? I know Draymond was walking around talking to him afterwards, giving him a hug, saying, you guys will be back here a bunch. It's easy to say that, will they?
Well, before we get into Boston, I do want to say one more thing about these young Warriors. When it comes to winning a championship, you need to have at least one super special player. Not just a star, not just a superstar, but somebody who is on that next level. They don't have to be that all the time, but they have to be that when it counts. Steph Curry is that player. And I don't think we've seen a championship in a long time where a team didn't have that player. It's almost impossible to predict that somebody's going to become that level of a player. Like, who would have thought Steph Curry would be that player? Who would have thought Giannis would be that player? So my point is, as bullish as we could be on Kuminga, on Moody, if you want to be bullish on Wiseman or Jordan Poole, the odds that they get to that level, that's really low. And so, you know, we talk about the long-term window of competing, sure, right? Good players can help you, be a competitive team, make the playoffs, maybe win a series, maybe even two. But to be a championship team, you need that special player. And so for the Warriors, it's really going to be how long is Steph Curry at that level where you feel good about it. All right, the Celtics, I know you want to talk about them. I do too. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, Jason Tatum is young. Jaylen Brown is young. Wing is the premium position in the NBA. They absolutely could be back. But the comparison we made earlier, the Thunder, the young Thunder with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and James Harden, who would have thought they wouldn't be back to the finals? You can never take that for granted.
You can't. And they're in an East where, you know, Milwaukee won a title. They will get they'll get Middleton back healthy next year in theory. Giannis is still at his peak, and we could get into Drew Holiday and decline and their role players and where they are in a year, but they're contenders. They will enter next year title contenders. Miami will be right there. Brooklyn
has the talent.
You know, there's a lot of questions there, but the talent is absolutely there to be. Like, there's no guarantee. And I don't just mean next year. There's no guarantee that in the next 3 years that they're going to be back here. And part of it is how they grow out of this. How do they develop? But like, they're saying all the right things now, but like, how do they really play out of this? And then I think they've got to add, like I said, the shooting, but more than that too, they've just got to add some depth. To get more, it'd be great here to have the versatility in a finals type of setting, but it's also just about the regular season. Does Tatum need to take a step forward?
Yes, yes. I mean, he can look incredible at times. Like that type of superstar I'm talking about where you can't win the championship without it. I think he has some games where he's just not that. So he has the high ceiling. He's got a, you know, maybe it's conditioning. Maybe it's just taking a rest. Maybe it's kind of understanding how to pace yourself through the regular season. I'd have to look back. Where do you have him on your MVP ballot? I think I might have ended up having him fourth.
I had him fifth because I had Luka fourth.
Okay, because like there's the big three, right, of Jokic, Embiid, and Giannis. And then I was kind of looking, I'm like, wow, like for me, MVP is all about what did you contribute in the regular season, right? And you can contribute more if you're playing more. Like, wow, I didn't think Jason Tatum was one of the very, very best player, like excellent player, but the very, very best player, I don't know. But he played a lot more games, a lot more minutes than a lot of the other down-ballot MVP candidates. And that's why I'm kind of like, well, I guess kind of by default he's fourth. Maybe next year, I hate this is how it works, but maybe next year he pulls back a little bit in the regular season, isn't finishing quite as high in these award races, may not make all NBA first team, but is better prepared for the playoffs.
That's, without going down a very deep rabbit hole, that's the issue, right? That's the challenge for the NBA with the regular season is to have the revenue keep coming in, but keep the games interesting and keep your best players on the floor. People are showing up to see Steph Curry play. They're showing up to see Jason Tatum play. And if he's playing less, I think the best way to do that is the year Giannis won MVP and his minutes were pretty low, mostly because he didn't play fourth, right? Like, it's kind of ideal when you can get away with, oh, he plays most games, he just doesn't have to play the fourth. They've got to find a way to, look, he's young now and his legs, we can debate how much they wore out during the finals, but as he gets older, that will matter more. They are going to have to find some depth, and it's on Brad to do that, and for them to maybe develop guys. I think that's at the end of the day in the NBA now. Don't you have to be able to draft some guys and make them at least role players?
Well, to me, I mean, Tatum and Jaylen Brown are the draft success stories. When people like pan the Celtics drafting, I don't know why everybody skips those two. I didn't think those were not the guys I would have drafted, and I was wrong. I think the Celtics did a great job of identifying and developing those two. As far as making the regular season matter, in-season tournament, right? That'll fix everything.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Adam wants that. Adam Silver wants that. It's going to happen, right?
I'm just looking around. We're still at the arena in Boston. I'm just looking to see if anybody from the NBA is listening, and they do not like it when you are very negative about the in-season tournament.
No, they don't. And I've said before, they're going to try it at some point. I'll continue to say, I just don't think it's going to work here. It's baked into international soccer culture, the FA Cup, for like to use an easy example, or something in England, but these exist everywhere in every country. That's just baked into the culture. But they also, I mean, there's Champions League and whatever that runs concurrent to it, but there isn't a playoff system. Hey, we play a regular season, then we determine a champion. It doesn't work that way. So these cups have a different, it's all just a different way of looking at things and culture, and I don't think it's going to fly here.
Yeah, just, I don't either.
By the way, we're sitting here beneath the 17 Celtics banners. If they win the midseason tournament, they're not putting up a banner, are they?
Well, now that's an interesting one. Is the NBA going to pressure them? Because look, there are plenty of teams that would gladly put up a banner.
If the Sacramento Kings put up one for summer league, it's in the building.
I was thinking Sacramento too. That is,
they have the summer league banner.
Yeah,
up,
maybe. So they're asking for it, I guess. Man, that would – see, now I'd be rooting for the Celtics in the first in-season tournament just to see. They would not want to put up the banner. I will give the Celtics that level of respect. They don't want that. They don't this is not what this organization's about. But would the NBA pressure them into doing it to give it legitimacy?
It would be interesting if – I think there's a few teams. I don't think the Lakers would. I don't think the Celtics would. I don't think the Warriors would. But it'd be interesting to see what happens when Bulls – like right next to your six Jordan.
Well, I think the Bulls would. I think the Bulls have had enough of a time where, you know, they're celebrating those little successes like a sellout streak or things like that.
Yeah. Hey, Taylor Swift sold the building out 15 nights, man. Get a banner up there.
Does she have a banner?
She has a banner at Staples Center for that.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I wonder if – I don't know if I'm putting the Lakers – the only one I'm certain that absolutely would not want to is the Celtics. I think the Lakers might be a little bit more like in line as a league partner.
Maybe I doubt it though, we're way off topic. But it's going to be interesting to see how. I don't think we see that for a couple of years, but I do think ultimately we see it. I do think ultimately the league gets their way there. We start looking ahead. I hate to jump like that, but is Boston? Well, I guess we should wait to see how things shake out. But is Boston even your East favorite going into next season?
That's a good question. I do think they'll be the best. Do you think they were the best team in the Eastern Conference this year? I mean, if the Bucks were healthy, do you think? Yeah. I think the Bucks might have been. It's close. I kind of think the Celtics were the best team, but it's not definitive. I'll say this: I'm definitely favoring the field over the Celtics. And actually, you know, if we're looking to segue for a second. If you remember at the beginning of the season, we did our picks. We did our award picks.
Oh, yeah,
the way
yeah.
we set this up is we're putting a bow on this season is we did NBA champion, Eastern Conference champion, Western Conference champion, all the individual awards. And we kind of did a bid of, all right, how many
That's
teams
right.
or players
yeah.
do you think you need to say where you're most likely to have the correct answer? And whoever had the lowest bid named them. And if you're right, you're right. So we had 9 categories. We got 2 of them correct. We did not do well. We need to have less confidence in ourselves. We can review these picks real quick. If you want to hear some foolish ideas, you can go back and listen to the old podcast.
Thanks a lot for keeping these.
Yes. So the final score was 1-1. The one you got correct was 6th man of the year. You named several players. Tyler Hero is one of them. You named 8 players. You got it. Coach of the year, I got. I named 11 coaches, and one of them was Monty Williams. And then we can just go over some of the ones we got very wrong. I had the NBA champion. I had 3 picks. It was the Nets, Bucks, and Lakers. Whoops.
The funny thing is, looking back now, we put the Lakers in there because we didn't trust anybody else out west.
Yeah, yeah. The Lakers, I did think coming into the season, were like the most extreme team I had seen maybe ever in terms of upside and downside.
Yeah.
I didn't quite expect it to be this bad. But you could see the blow-up potential with Russell Westbrook's fit. So in the East, these were – the conference champions were both your picks. In the East, you had the Nets or Bucks. And that one came a little closer coming true. And in the West, you had the Lakers, Jazz, and Suns. And I'm going to brag just for a moment here because I do remember this part of the conversation. We talked about the Warriors. And I didn't pick the Warriors, and neither did you. But I said the Warriors are a legitimate championship contender, and you poo-pooed it. And we can go back and listen to the tape.
No, and
you said, wow, you must really believe in Klay Thompson. I said, no, it's not even that. I don't need Pete Klay to come back. I believe in Steph and Draymond and, you know, this team's culture. And here we go.
I will tell you, I went back and looked at the last power rankings I did last week of the season. Warriors were 8th.
Ooh.
And all I said, you know, at that point I'm writing about playoff chances, championship odds. I'm like, and all I wrote was the theory of the Warriors is great. I don't believe that they're going to be – because remember, Curry had been injured still at the end of the season. Draymond had missed time. Like, I don't think they're going to be healthy enough. I don't think they're going to pull this off. I was obviously wrong about that one too.
I've harped on this stat, and the thing that gave me the most confidence in the Warriors going into the season was how good they were last year when they didn't have James Wiseman and they didn't have Kelly Oubre on the court. It didn't matter who else was on the court. As long as those two guys who didn't fit in the slightest weren't on the court, the Warriors were awesome. And I really wonder what they're going to look like when Wiseman comes back because he was not a good fit. You see the talent. You see the athleticism. You can see the upside. You look at like what Robert Williams does for the Celtics and say, wow, that could work in something like what the Warriors do. But that's so hypothetical, so far for James Wiseman to go. I do wonder about that next
year. I'm with you that I'm not sure Wiseman can be that guy. And there is talk that he might play summer league. I'd be really curious to see how he looks.
And so just to wrap up a couple of these other award picks we had, I had MVP. I named 6 players: Joel Embiid, Luka Doncic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Steph Curry. Obviously, none of those were correct. And you said you wanted 8 names, and you did have Jokic in yours. So you would have won that one if you had bid low enough. But you know, you also wanted the names I had, so it's tough. Defensive player of the year, we had a bunch of bigs. Rookie of the year, you know, we had the standard picks before the season of Jalen Green and Cade Cunningham. And obviously, Scotty Barnes won that one in Toronto.
I didn't see that one coming. I didn't think he – I thought he might be good someday. I did not think he was going to be that good that fast.
And then for most improved player, that was the last one. You missed that one. You had 10 names. I had 25 names I wanted to give. Ja Morant was one of them, but just not enough confidence there. So final score 1-1. We're going to have to do a rematch on that next year.
Yeah, we should actually do that. And it was a fun way to lean into the season, as wrong as we were. We'll probably be horribly wrong next year. And who knows where we'll end up. We very well could end up right back here in Boston. If like I said, I think they've got to get some depth. But maybe the biggest thing for them is just Jason Tatum taking that next step, right? Like they need them to be the guys they weren't in this series. They they couldn't consistently raise their level the way Steph did.
One thing I wonder about this team going forward is the Celtics made such an interesting trade-off, making Marcus Smart their point guard when he had been more of a combo guard in previous years. And I do think that hurt the offense a little bit, but he stepped up. He did a good job, not a great job. The upside is you get tremendous defense. You get size at every position, no weak links. This is what a championship defense looks like, and you could only do that with Marcus Smart as the point guard. But it does cap your offensive ceiling. So do you want to swing the other way a little bit on that trade-off? Are you just going to kind of Marcus Smart to get better in that role? I don't know.
Yeah. That's actually a really good question because there were points, and Al Horford, I guess, in some ways was their emotional leader, but there were points where I was like, is someone there going to calm them down, settle them? And Curry kind of does that instinctively, but somebody to be to use a different team, someone to be their Chris Paul. Like, all right, hey, we're not going to get crazy now. We're going to settle back into what we do. And they didn't do that. Maybe they learned from this and that's the lesson they take away. Or do you get a veteran, you know, you bring, I don't know, is Ricky Rubio that guy, but like bring in a veteran backup point guard who could do a little of that. Although
Derek White
did somewhat. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, to me, it's not so much selling down, although that is part of it. I'm not disagreeing. But to me, the bigger issue is I'd like to have more movement, ball movement, player movement, not so much one-on-one stuff. And you can only do that if you have better passing than they do.
Although when their offense was clicking, the ball did move better.
Yes, absolutely.
They just, as we said, not enough. And then when pressured, when stressed.
And tired. I think tired was the big one.
Yeah, they just stopped. They stopped. And the Warriors, I don't think this gets talked enough. With Steph. Steph Curry might be as good or the best conditioned athlete the NBA right now. And his ability to move constantly and not really wear down is, and not have his shots really hit the front of the rim is insane.
I do think Steph might be number one. Also in the running is Andrew Wiggins, right? I mean, these are two of the players in the best shape, tireless. Steph was, after the game, I mean, still bursting with energy, yelling and talking and bouncing around from interview to interview, station to station, all the responsibilities he had as Finals MVP, as the star of this team, and just so much energy in how he was going about it.
And we should talk a little about Andrew Wiggins. I don't know that there's been talk about him redeeming the narrative and all that. I think part of this is what it shows is how much fit matters and how much role matters and how much he was taken from, hey, he wasn't built to be the number one guy, right? He wasn't built to be option number one. Here where he was, hey, play good defense, you're option number, well, we might have been two by the end of the series, but in most days, three, four. Like, he settled into that, and when they got the big offensive games from him, that was great, but they didn't need it every night like Minnesota needed it. And in that sense, he found a home, and he seems more confident than he was.
The part I found most interesting, kind of, you know, during the long regular season, we're looking at so many teams and keying in on the Warriors as they're advancing and advancing and advancing, is how much they rely on Wiggins. Even though he is that third or fourth option, he brings the ball up court sometimes. He initiates the offense sometimes. I wonder if some of this is to placate his ego, but he's pretty good at it, to give Steph a little breather, right? I think that's one of those, as tireless as Steph is, every star kind of has those in-game breathers where it's like, all right, this is a possession where they're not going to be involved. And a lot of times it's Wiggins running the offense there, which is not always what you get from a complimentary player like he usually is. Like, he can't do that all the time. This is why one of the reasons the Timberwolves weren't good when he was in that role. But he can do it some. It's interesting how they find that balance.
Yeah, they did. The Warriors did a great job of Bob Myers does a really good job of just finding guys who fit. And playing them into the system. Steve Kerr is obviously part of that too, so. The Warriors could be back here next year. Again, we talked about how deep the East was. The West is stupid next year. The West is going to be Memphis will be better. Denver gets healthy. I think the Mavericks will be better. The Clippers get healthy. All the way down to New Orleans could be interesting if you want to bet on Zion. But I mean, that's just a whole lot of good players, and it's going to be a really interesting conference.
Did you say Phoenix?
I didn't know. How did I leave Phoenix
right.
out?
You said Denver, right?
Yes.
And so, yeah, I mean, there's just more that you can keep track of. It's
Yeah, Phoenix is one of, and I don't know what Utah is going to do, but Phoenix is one of my most interesting offseason teams, just because if they move on from DeAndre, how do they replace that? And how, if you bring in an OG and an OB, it gets interesting. Like, how do you shift some of the responsibilities, but you could also be even more versatile and athletic? It's going to be interesting to see what direction they end up going.
Yeah, I mean, center is the easiest position to replace. Like, look how good Bismack Biyombo or JaVale McGee looked at times there. Not as good as DeAndre Ayton, but you have to allocate that asset, that resource somewhere else. You can't just let him go to save the money and expect to be as good.
No, exactly. And I think it's fair to question whether he deserves the money he's about to get. Somebody's going to max or near max him. And I think it's fair to ask in Ayton's case, or centers in general that aren't named Embiid or Jokic or Towns, if they're worth that in today's NBA.
You could ask about Towns if you want, right before he gets the Supermax. I mean, you know, the Max, okay. The Supermax, I don't know. You maybe D up a little bit more before you get that.
Yeah, he's going to get the money, but they're going to need him to play better defense. And we're not turning this into a Minnesota Timberwolves future-looking podcast. So, we'll continue here. Dan, thanks for doing this. It's been a fun year, and we've got, obviously, plenty coming up at Pro Basketball Talk. You're talking draft next week on this podcast?
That's the plan. That's the plan. Jeremy Wu of Sports Illustrated. Kurt, you realize this is the first time we've watched a game together since 2019?
Yes. It's funny. I was texting my wife today. I'm like, I haven't actually seen Dan in person at a game. Or I think was it All-Star? No, Finals? Finals 2019.
No, we didn't. All-Star. We didn't do any. Yeah, All-Star Chicago, right before.
That's right.
Right before the world ended,
or something like that. So it was good seeing you, man. It's been good seeing you in person, and
or you, no, I guess it would have been 2020, right? All-Star 2020, 2019, 2020 season.
2020, yeah, 2020 All-Star in frigid Chicago. Don't worry, next year it moves to baskingly warm Salt Lake City.
Can't
in
wait.
February.
Can't wait. We got to watch more games together.
All right, absolutely. Dan, thanks for doing this. Everyone, we will be back next week. The podcast does not stop. NBA, there will be plenty of stuff coming up with free agency and then NBA Summer League as well. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.